An interview with Rob Stacey today on the Ultimate Ground Rules.
But I have raised you up for this very purpose, that I might show you my power, and that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth.
Welcome to The Ultimate Ground Rules, a podcast built specifically to encourage, empower, and strengthen the faith of coaches as they live out their God-given purpose to develop the next generation of leaders. And now, your host, Dave Pritchard.
Hello and welcome to The Ultimate Ground Rules. I am your host, Dave Pritchard. Thanks for taking the time to listen to the show today. If you leave encouraged, take a moment to share the show with a coach you know. My goal is to reach as many coaches as possible with an encouraging word, and your help goes a long way in making that goal a reality. Recently, I sat down with Rob Stacey, head baseball coach at Clinton High School. Coach Stacey is full of energy and loves his community, his school, and his players. I look for big things to come from Clinton in the near future, and the insight that Coach Stacey provides is sure to help any coaches listening. I hope you enjoy our conversation as The Ultimate Ground Rules presents to you Coach Rob Stacey. Hey guys, today I'm with Rob Stacey, head baseball coach at Clinton High School in East Tennessee. Coach, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Oh man, well, I'm excited. I know you're a guy that gets after it, so I'm excited to see what you can provide and just the knowledge that you put out there for the guys that are listening. But just to get us started, why don't you tell us just a little bit about your coaching journey? I mean, you can go back to your playing days if you want, but you know, how you got into coaching, the journey that you've been on, and then just tell us a little about Clinton High School.
Awesome. So I grew up in a little town up in East Tennessee called Fall Branch. It's a feeder school for Daniel Boone High School. So I think you had Coach Hoover on here a while back, mm-hmm. and I remember listening to that podcast. It was awesome with him. Coach Hoover his first year was my senior year at Boone, so 2005. So he came in his first year as an assistant. I think he got the head job the next year. Played baseball and basketball and a couple years of football there at the beginning. But I came from a very small school that fed into that school. So we're looking at like 300 kids K through eight. So I was used to a small school environment, kind of like an underdog type role. And I kind of took that on to high school and, I played for a guy in basketball that really made an impact on my life, Bobby Snyder, who was just a huge influential person. He's a Hall of Famer in the state of Tennessee, has 835 wins. I mean, everything that we did on a daily basis, and I know this is a baseball topic, but everything we did on a daily basis has basically formed my entire coaching view and my entire playing career, from anything from how you dressed, how you walked to class, how you showed up for game day, how you dressed up for a game day, how your hair was cut. It was the real deal. I mean, because the man coached back in the 60s and 70s all the way up into 2005. So, I mean, there was years and years of knowledge there of just not just basketball and in general. And he was also a baseball coach, which was kind of crazy. He's actually the one that helped me get into college baseball. He's the one that made the phone calls for me. It was crazy. He had just a wealth of knowledge, and I'm not talking about just basketball. It's like daily knowledge. He helped start our FCA at our school. He was big on that and big on influence us on that. I tell everybody the craziest story. They're like, you know, what was it like playing for him? I was like, it was intense. And they're like, how do you explain, like, intense? What do you mean it's intense? I was like, I played for him for 4 years, and for 8 years, I knew him because of camps that he'd have these feeder camps leading up. They're called you'd play in this league called Boone Hoops with your other fellow middle schools, and then you'd play in these camps together. Like, by the time you got to, as a freshman, playing for this man, you knew every play that we were going to run, which was crazy. Like, the day one you step in, that's what you're doing. It's what we're trying to do here at Clinton currently. But the big thing that he did was, I tell everybody, it's so funny, like, in the 8 years that I knew this man, I heard the guy cuss one time. And I know it sounds crazy, especially in this day and age. He was a big Bobby Knight fan too, which he makes it even crazier that I just said that. But it was the values that he implemented. And like, you never realize that story that I just said until afterwards when you really thought about it. Me and my buddies get together, one of our one of my really good friends, he was in my wedding, Ben Fox, just got the Maryville College football job. He was a teammate of mine on that team, and it's stuff that we talk about all the time because he's a football coach. I'm a baseball coach. We kind of bounce ideas off each other, and a couple of our other friends own businesses now. Another one coaches basketball at Crockett. Another one owns is big time with his father at a big business. Another one works in dental. I mean, every person that's been on our basketball team has had some kind of success in life. And I can tell you right now, it's because of the values that he taught us. So, that's the number one thing I wanted to get out to everybody, that that guy really made an influence on not only my life, but many kids' lives that I'm hopefully touching right now. Fast forward, I went to Brevard College for 2 years. A guy named Gil Payne recruited me. Went up there, and as soon as I got there, Gil said, you know what, it's time for me to coach my son. So he moved back to Elizabeth in that first semester and started coaching his son. And I think he moved on to Tennessee High and coached, and then now he's down at Easley. He was the AD at Easley, and I think now he's the head coach at Easley. I think his first game, crazy stat for everybody listening, is his first game was playing against his son. I think his son's Jared that played at Tennessee High for him. But, yeah, they're his first game at Easley and Jared's first game at his school, I think it was Westside, it was against each other. Fast forward that, I transferred 2 years while I played there. A really good friend of mine, Nathan Free, his brother Travis Free, is actually Oak Ridge's baseball coach. Crazy enough, that's our rival. Roommate, best friend in college, calls me up one day. He's like, man, we need somebody to come out and play center field up in Pikeville. And I was like, Pikeville, where in the world is that place? So I start researching, drive up to Kentucky, meet a guy named Don Ashby, fell in love with the place, fell in love with the teammates that were there, Ryan Bartolone, Jordan Compton, Ben Wigger, Jeff Grimmie, Obed Keyless, who's now the volleyball coach. There's a lot of people up there that are still close to me. Ryan Jones, I mean, the list goes on of guys that I played with at that school that are still, I consider, really close friends. Played 2 years there in the Mid-South. It was a step up. I mean, both the AAC and the Mid-South are like premier Southeastern NAIA conferences. So, I mean, we were seeing dudes every day. I mean, it really shaped my whole view of what baseball really was by just getting in that atmosphere. Got done. Had another coaching change. That's what I tell everybody. I said, I have the most coaching changes that anybody's ever seen. A new coach came in, Rob Taylor, who used to be an assistant at Moorhead. He used to come to the camps at UT and work those too when Delmonico was down here. He came in, was head coach. I recognized him from the UT camps. I asked him if I could coach, so I coached there for 2 years. After coaching there for 2 years, I think it was the first year I'd applied for a school to be an assistant at Flagler in Florida. For Coach Barnett, I get down there, go through the whole interview process. I think it came down to three guys. I'm sitting in his office. He looks at me, goes, you know, I've narrowed it down. It was three guys. Now it's two. We just had dinner with his wife. I met the AD, and I was like, man, I'm about to live in St. Augustine. This is going to be awesome. He looks at me, he tells me the other guy's name, and I look around. I'm like, that name's familiar. I mean, you've got the same last name as his son. So, I mean, end up losing the a job to a son, which I think that's a pretty good pickup if you're going to pick your son over me. So I can't be too upset over that. So basically financial stuff started happening. I looked at my mom and dad who'd blessed me to go to college and play. And I looked around and I said, you know what? If I'm not going to make a ton of money doing this right now and be able to help pay these college bills, I've got to do something and change. Because I just can't look at them to continue to do this right now. If it was a different financial point, maybe. My dad drives a truck for Walmart and is the hardest working man I've ever known in my entire life. And my mother, she worked in a medical office. So, I mean, blue collar as it can be. I said, I can't do that to you. So I made a tough decision, moved home. At the time, I was actually training. This kind of gets into my background. If anybody follows me on Twitter or is like, why does he post stuff like all the time? So my background, I loved working out ever since I was 12. I used to be a weird fanatic kid that get up at 6 a.m. and work out at his house. My dad looked at me one day and said, son, you know what? you need to make sure that you never have back problems, is what he told me. So make sure you work out. For some reason, I always remember that. And I was like, every morning at 6 a.m., I was like, don't have back problems, let's bench press. So I drink milk and do all that stuff. So I get to move home. I start training. I said, I want to go into the Coast Guard. So I apply to go into the Coast Guard. For some reason, get denied. Don't know why, still to this day. So I go and talk to the Air Force recruiter. I was like, I'm going to go combat control, which is their special forces. And I asked the guy, I said, you know, how do you get into combat control? Like, what's the requirements? And we start talking about it. And he starts introducing me to this stuff called CrossFit. And this is early 2011, 2012, right before it kind of got big. And I said, all right, I'm going to train for this. So I'm training. I'm going to the gym constantly. I'm actually helping my neighbor to work in gutter. I'd finally one day was up on a roof and I look around and I was like, man, I was like, you know what? I'm pretty fair skinned and this is not a job for me. Not that I don't like it. Not that I don't respect anybody that does it, but I don't think I'm going to last too long up here. So I decided right then I'm 100% into combat control. Got ready to sign papers to go into the Air Force. The day I was supposed to sign papers, my buddy, the 3 days previous that, had told me, hey, I need you to try to apply to work at the gym. And I was like, they're not going to hire me. I've been trying to get these coaching jobs. I can't get no callbacks. They're not going to hire me. I mean, just downing myself. And he said, I just give it a shot. So I go in. They want to hire me. I talk to my mother. She begs me. She says, please, just, I don't want to see you go overseas. I don't want to see you do this. Please give us an opportunity, at least 3 months. After 3 months, if you don't like it, you can go back and do what you do. My grandfather, background check on this. My grandfather flew in the Air Force, flew B-17 bombers, got shot down in Germany, parachuted out, was a POW. He was one of the prisoner camps that General Patton busted open. So that's another background of somebody that raised me when I was younger. Just having that background of he played football at Virginia Tech. I mean, just I had a background of and I got crazy stories about that too. I have a background of guys just having influences on my life that were just, you wake up at 6 a.m., you work your tail off for the rest of the day, you go home, you go to sleep, and you start over and do it all again. So anyways, fast forward to that. And I basically work at this gym for about 8 or 10 years, open up a CrossFit affiliate, and I have success with it. We go from basically 1 month, we had 10 to 15, maybe 20 members. And then I go from there all the way up to 60 members. And then all of a sudden I get to 150 members. And I think at the height, we're like at 200 members. And we were in a very small complex too, in the back of this large 5,000 members gym. So we grew something. I created it and made it like a team. And the big thing on that was I had a bunch of guys that worked underneath me. And it's kind of where I basically grew my coaching in that aspect, was I had this team. Basically, they're my employees, but I treated them like they're my assistant coaches, because that's what they were doing. They were coaching people every day on fitness. That said, I really learned how to basically treat people and understand, like, your assistant coaches are the most important people on your staff. And the most important people in your program. Your players are important, but if you don't take care of your assistants and try to really grow them and grow what they want to do in life, then you'll never understand truly how to respond to your members or your players or anything like that, because those guys actually hear what the players are saying, right? Maybe about you, or, you know, you've got that player that comes up to you and says, Coach, I'd like to talk to you, but he's actually already told your assistant coach everything he's going to tell you. And your assistant coach tells you what he's going to say, and it prepares you to have that conversation with that young man. So you gotta keep your assistants really close. But anyways, so I get back into it for about 10 years of coaching and doing strength training and getting really into that. I had like 15 certifications at the time. And then I decided, I said, this is not what makes me happy every day. I was getting up at 3:45 a.m., driving 45 minutes, coaching a class at 5 a.m., 6 a.m., working out myself from 7 to 9, going and training people till 1 or 2, then working out myself again because I was trying to do it competitive, and then going home every night about 8. I had a little boy. I said, I want to see him more often, so I made a decision. I said, I'm going back and getting my master's in physical education, and I'm going to go back into coaching. So I got lucky. I had a guy that owned RBI in Johnson City, Paul Holman and Dylan Pratt, who were – Dylan was a teammate of mine, and Paul obviously – if you know that name, Paul played at ETSU and was the first home run derby champion in college. So they both said, hey, do you want to coach this 15U team that nobody wants to coach? I said, 100%. Get me on board. Mike Ranson actually helped me with that too. So I get on board. Coach them. There was a coaching change at Crockett, and I said, sign me up. Tell me where I need to go. Tell me when I need to be there. They actually go with my buddy, my really close friend, Spencer Street. He was an assistant at Boone. He played at Science Hill and then played at Milligan, was a four-year starter at Milligan. Phenomenal baseball mind. And they basically brought me in. I thought it was an interview for a head coaching job. And it was Spencer asking me if I wanted to be his assistant. And they're like, hey, can you do this? Can you just be his assistant? And I said, 100%. I said, I'm here to coach kids. I want to get better. So I coached Crockett for 1 year. What people don't know is for 3 years, I actually went over and helped Scott Hagee, who's now Boone's coach, help do their strength and conditioning. So I had a familiar background with Crockett, especially them being our rivals when I was in high school. But I it was close to my heart to go there and work with kids because I had a lot of friends that were there too. Fast forward that, I see this job open up, Clinton. I remember I went back in the day, and I know you might remember this, Dave. I went back in the day, and I probably sent out every email to everybody in the state of Tennessee when I was trying to recruit guys in college. So I get this email back from a guy named Casey Taylor. Now I'm sitting in the library up at the school, and Casey Taylor's like, yeah, buddy, come on down. I said, just come on down. I'll have a work day and everything. So I'm on my way, driving to Clinton, Tennessee, cross the bridge. I'm like, this is a kind of cool place. I go down to the field. Casey's got him out there doing like a full pro work day. I have a couple of their guys come up. We couldn't get them to sign. But I always remember that there was something special about this place. So when I see it scroll across my thing, I apply for it and I remember the name, but I don't remember the whole trip. So as I'm driving down here for this interview, when Brad Collette called me, I drive across the bridge again and I'm like, man, this is so familiar. I go to the field and I'm like, I've been here before. I remember now, I've recruited kids from here. So then when I officially get the job, I call up Casey Taylor and I talk to him. I said, do you remember me coming down here? I said, because I'm sure you're like, who is this guy that just got the job where I used to coach at and my dad used to coach at? So long story short, that's what brought me to Clinton. I looked at it from a standpoint of, I told my wife, if we were ever going to move from our hometowns, which is back in the Tri-Cities, or take a coaching job, I want to go somewhere that not only changes a wins and losses record. I want to go somewhere that changes and we have an influence on a community. Because if that's what I want in it for, I want to change a community, change a mindset, change a culture of a community, not a baseball culture. Everybody talks about their baseball culture and wanting to change it, but nobody really dives deep and is like, are you changing your school's culture? Because you change your school's culture, it's going to change your baseball culture. And we've been fortunate, man, like to have some success there. She's a teacher too. She's taught me the ropes. I mean, if there's a question, I'm texting her. she always gave me a hard time before I got this. She's like, you wait till you're a teacher. You'll understand. It's a big difference. And I'm like, I can't wait to just chase some kids around. That's going to make my day. So here we are at Clinton High School. Sorry, I was long-winded. But.
That's good. So you've got all these influences in your life and that have led you to where you are. But, you know, who was it that really shaped your faith?
So, I mean, that's a great question. And then I think you'd sent me some stuff. And I was sitting there looking at it today, and I was talking about it. I mean, Coach Schneider definitely did because, team prayers. We knew the Lord's Prayer – like the back of our hand. And one thing that kind of really threw me off when I got to coaching in travel ball and coaching in high school, I'd recite the Lord's Prayer with our guys and I'd have a majority of the players not know it. And I know that I had that lull of 10 years, basically 10 years of not being around that age group. So, imagine going 10 years, like it's almost like, I went to like a Back to the Future movie. I jumped forward 10 years. My mindset is like what it used to be, and I'm not understanding how everything's changed, especially the culture of kids and how they act and what gets them motivated. But Coach Schneider, it was a definite impact. I'd have to say my mom too. A lot of my faith, a lot of my questions about the Lord and everything that was going on in my life. Cause you know, when you're a teenager, especially a male, and you get upset about not playing or breaking the lineup or doing stuff like that, I mean, it can really weigh on you. And there was nights I remember, especially I'd come home just crying in tears because I'm here, I am working my tail off, you know, and I'm not seeing the results in my eyes. I have a high standard for myself. Everybody else around me seeing the results and they're seeing how proud they are of me, but I'm not seeing it myself. And I had to take a real reflection on that. And the only person I could talk to was my mother. So my mother, because my dad was working. The best part of advice my dad ever gave me was one, always work out. But it was also the second thing. I came to him one time. I was so mad after a basketball game. I was like, I can't understand why so-and-so's playing. I don't understand it. And he's like, well, have you talked to Coach Schneider about it? And I was like, well, I'm like trying to like, you know, find my words. I'm like, what do you mean talk to him? What do you mean? He should know. He should know I come at 6 a.m. and shoot every day. He should like respect that. And he's like, but have you talked to him about it? Have you asked him why you aren't playing? Have you seeked him out? Have you sat down in his office and said, what could you do better for me to get in the lineup? And I was just sitting there like, oh my gosh, like I'll try. Like it scared you to death to go talk to a coach about that stuff, right? Especially when cell phones were new. Right. You don't just text a coach. Like we didn't even know what text was then. You had to actually pick up a phone and call his house, which was even scarier because then his wife answers and you got to talk to her and then you got to talk to him. So it's even scarier. So I went and talked to him one day in his office and he basically just told me flat out, I've earned more respect for you for coming to me and talking to me about this. And I'll take a closer look at what you're doing in practice. And next thing you know, in 3 weeks, I'm starting. I mean, it was a life changer. It really changed my perspective. And to piggyback off that, back what my mom did too, she said, you know, do you talk to God every day? Do you talk to the Lord every day? And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, how do you pray? Like, what are you talking about? And we went to church, but I mean, I went and I sat mindlessly, like most people at that age did. I sat there and I tried to focus, and I'm an ADD guy, so I can't focus for more than 10 minutes on that. So, I'm sitting there trying to focus. And she said, have you prayed to him every night? Have you said the Lord's Prayer every night? Have you asked him to help others and the people around you, or are you asking him to help only you? And that's really what shaped my entire completely outlook on things in life. I was like, that's true. Like, am I asking, like when I sit down at night and pray, am I saying, hey, Lord, will you bless me with a home run tomorrow? Or am I saying, hey, Lord, will you bless my teammates, help them to get better grades? Will you bless my teammates and their families to keep them safe? Will you bless my family? Like those kind of questions. And man, my life really changed when I started doing that. It was crazy.
So if you take that, you know, the things that your mom taught you there, that's really good. You know, how do you try to use that as you coach? And, you know, are there some scriptures that you really cling to? Man, coaching is hard. And, you know, you've got times that are really good, you get times that are really bad. And, you know, you talk to your guys, I'm sure, just like every coach does, about, you know, don't ride the highs and the lows, but, you know, stay steady. But that can be hard to do. And so as you navigate in that and you navigate trying to lead these young men, you know, how is what your mom taught you there helped you? And are there some scriptures that you really cling to help you there?
Yeah, like one of the biggest things that I really do for our guys, and I wish somebody would have done with me, you know, everybody talked about God, everybody talked about reading your Bible, everybody talked about memorizing verses, but nobody like really looked at me and said, hey, you want to come to church? You want to come to my church this week? Right. Again, my dad worked his tail off. So he worked his days off for like, it was like weird. It's like Tuesdays or Thursdays. And then my mother was constantly working too. And then I had sports, and that's when the height of things were happening on the weekend. So it was rare that we were getting to church. And even then when we did get to church, we were going to this one church, and I remember it really left a sour taste in my mouth. And I hope this helps people when I hear this. It was a situation where my dad had missed church for a couple weeks, and you get that phone call that, hey, you know, haven't seen you. And it just went to a point of like, hey, haven't seen you, worried about you, to like, are you influencing, are you doing the right things for your kids? And here I am at like 14. I'm like, you know what? That doesn't sit well with me. I don't think I'm going to go back. But that said, I still read, and I still read my Bible. I still tried to pray. Like, there was not a moment that I like strayed away from God and said, you know, I just hate this. Then you go to college, and then college was really crazy, because then you're, you know, you try to have to find a church that's around your college. But a big thing that I was big in was trying to go to my FCA meetings at my college, or go to my prayer meetings at colleges. Then I got out of college, and my wife is the one, cause I would, in college, when I come home, I'd always take my grandparents to church. I was like, the one thing I can do, even though everybody has their quirks with what they like in church and what they don't like. And, you know, I'd take my grandparents and I'd sit there and I'd be like, I love listening to this message, but there's something about it that's not grasping me every day and making me like yearn for this. So my wife invited me. She invited me to church, and my best friend, it was a roommate in college, invited me to church. I went, and I mean, they get upset me now, because I'm like, we better not miss. I'm like, I'm the one calling them every day, and I'm like, let's go, and let's go to all these meetings. Make sure that we're doing this and that. Let's be part of all this. We go to a church here in Clinton called Faith Promise, which is amazing. They have a couple campuses in the area too, but to get back on that, basically, like, you know, there's a couple verses that were really close to me. Proverbs 3:5-6, you know, it talks about, and I'm going to recite this for you, because it really made me, like, the biggest thing, like, when I go back and I think about all this stuff, is like, when I let God take over is when my life got better. When I tried to fight him and the path I was on, things were at the worst. And I don't think it's God punishing you. It's God trying to put you on that path, if that makes sense. He's never trying to punish you. He's trying to challenge you and put on a path that makes you better at life. And I'd always look at these situations, like job interviews that didn't go right, or the opportunities I didn't get for coaching or something like that. I'd look at it and say, God's challenging me to get even better than what I currently am. He's saying, you are ready, but you're not ready for this step. Go do something to get you better. And when you come back, you'll be ready, and I'll make sure that you're ready. So I look at situation. I talk to our players about that a lot too. God doesn't hate you. He doesn't hate you. He wants to see you do the best. So he's going to make sure that he's challenging you every day. Like, God doesn't want you to look like, God doesn't want you asking for a 50-mile-an-hour fastball. He wants you asking for a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. That's how much he wants you to get better. So a script that I keep with him, that's basically the script that made me realize that God's all in control. Now, the one that I really keep close to me is Proverbs 16:3, and it's, commit your work to the Lord and your plans will be established. When I decided to commit everything that I do, and I think Tim Tebow had a big influence on me for this, when he said, you know, I score a touchdown, or I do all this, the best platform I have in my job is to glorify God. And he's like, everybody can get upset at me about it, but I'm using my platform. Another guy, another Butch Chafin alumni, Rich Fronning for CrossFit, same thing. He said, I have a platform that I need to use. If I use this platform, I can touch so many more lives. And then what I do on a daily basis will be so much more rewarding. So for our guys, I just want to invite them to church. Like, I don't know if they've ever been invited. I get here and like,
right,
I think it blew their minds that I was like, hey man, do you want to go to church with me this weekend? They'd never heard that. Yeah. You know, when I first got here, that was one of the coolest things about Clinton, Dave, is we get done with like the introduction speech, and we're standing there at home plate, and everybody's talking to me, like wanting to know me. And then all of a sudden, like clockwork, like four or five families ask, hey, where are you going to go to church at? And, you know, this is like the first time my family's seen this place besides myself. Wow. And that's when I got in the car, and I remember looking at my wife going, we found the right place. And she was like, why? And I go, they asked us, like, not where our house was at, not where anything else was at. They knew what was important first. They said, have you found a church? Do you know where you're going to go to church at? So there for a couple of weeks, I was going to everybody's church, you know, trying to find the best fit for us and our family. But it really blew our first players' minds when I would show up after they've invited me. And then I would invite them, and it blew them, it blew their minds even more, because kids these days, they see so much stuff on social media. And I've realized, you know, Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or your TikToks, like there can be some parts that are good to that, and they can find stuff with God and the Lord, but a large majority of that steer them in the wrong direction. And I'm not sitting here saying everything's, you know, everything Satan's trying to get you with all that stuff. I don't want kids to think that either. But you get on that stuff and you see a lot of negative stuff, and they don't have a lot of positive influence of people just asking them to do something positive. It's always, it's like they're getting, like they're constantly getting pulled with stuff. And I thought, if I can keep them interested in baseball and keep them interested in stuff in life and get them to church with me, they'll have a pretty good path in life, man.
Awesome. So as you're trying to steer them in that direction and just have an impact on them, I know just a lot of different coaches listen to this program, and, you know, guys are always looking for ideas. Is there anything that you do at Clinton that you think is a little bit unique in trying to reach your players?
So one big thing that I do here, so a couple things. The biggest thing is when we came in, we had a lady named Miss Merriman. Her nickname's Hoppy. Well, she works through a grant through our school system to help kids with their ACT schools and pick colleges and stuff like that. Well, I came in, and I mean, I just hammered grades. The very first thing I said, if we can't take care of ourselves in the classroom, like, we can't do it. Like, we can't do anything in baseball. Like, if you can't sit in the front row, you can't, like, talk to your teachers, you can't write notes — that's a good thing that we do — you can't write notes to your teachers telling them that you appreciate them, and what they do on a daily basis, how can we ever get them to believe in you as a community? We do a lot of community outreach stuff, as far as we do. Now, it does help us raise money for our baseball program in some aspects, but a lot of it is just meeting people that are involved with stuff in the community. Like, we did a car show. Man, it was amazing. Like, you know, everybody does car washes and everybody does golf tournaments. We did a car show, and now we know an entire other community of people that weren't even aware of baseball, right? Another big thing that we do is I make sure that we have, you know, we dress the correct way in school. I know this is a lot of stuff people hear in college, but I feel like it's going to affect these guys in high school, because some of these guys, and that's why we talk about, like, some of you guys might play college baseball, but a majority of you guys aren't. So some of you guys are going to go straight into the workforce. Some of you guys are going to go into technical school. Some of you guys are going to have interviews for college, you know, to get in. You need to look the part, act the part. Like, that's what you need to do. A big thing that we have at our school for us right now that I've been involved in is we have a thing called Teens for Christ. It's on Tuesdays and on Fridays. So on Fridays, I encourage the guys to go on Fridays. Tuesdays in the morning, so I kind of let them kind of make that decision. But we've also been in this cool thing. I tweeted it out a while back. We have a unique lunch at our school where it's an hour long. Kids can go wherever they want. You know, they can get homework done. They can play basketball. They can just do whatever they want for an hour. It gets their minds off of school. And that way, when they come back, they're kind of got this high of, like, just having fun. And then they can actually go into the classwork and be focused. Well, what we do on Wednesdays is the second half of lunch, we come in and just talk baseball. Like, me and the guys, we put up on the screen, you know, hey, let's watch this right here. Let's see what Mike Trout has to say about hitting approach. We watch a video on Mike Trout for like 5 minutes. And I ask guys, hey, what do you think about that? It's really made me to them more approachable about anything. So now I get guys just randomly coming up and asking questions, not about baseball, but about life. And I'd mentioned this to our assistant the other day, Jackson Arnold. And I said, you know what? I see everybody always posting stuff like, hey, we're doing this drill today. Hey, we're lifting this weight today. Hey, we're doing this today. Hey, we're doing this fielding drill. And I looked at him, I said, how many of these guys are really actually teaching? Like, are you 90% baseball and 10% life? Or are you, like, you know, 70% life and 30% baseball? Because most of these kids need 70% life and lessons in life. Right. So when we have speeches or talks, it's more of like relating it to what you're going to do in everyday life. It's not about, hey, what are you going to do when there's two outs and a runner at third and it's the last inning? It's like, hey, what are you going to do when someone comes up to you and doesn't have the same opinion you do, maybe about politics? What are you going to have what are you going to do when someone comes up to you and they don't have the same view as religion? Like, how are you going to approach that? And it's helped shape our guys a lot. I like it. I like having that one-on-one with them. We try to do a ton of one-on-one. Our lunch times, we make guys go do study halls with our coaches, our assistant coaches, because, again, like, we want to see them a lot. We want to know who they are. And it keeps them out of trouble from doing other stuff too. I mean, the lunch is great. By no means is anybody getting like crazy in trouble here. But what I mean by that is like you could do something so more productive for your life if you'll just come spend 30 minutes with us than going hanging out in the bleachers and talking about something that's not important to you. And then when you leave, you forget. So that's something that's unique for us is that hour lunch and just getting to know guys on a personal level.
So 2021, you talked earlier about that decade of not being around this age group.
Yeah.
And as you've had time over the last, you know, over the last year and a half to be around them on a more consistent basis, what do you think a high school player in 2021 needs most from his coach?
Man, it's a great question because I tweeted it out a little bit today too. As we have to understand, and I mean, I'm 33, so I'm not super young on the coaching spectrum and not super old. I'm in that middle ground. And people are like, you know, you're a young baseball coach. Yeah, but I mean, when you deal with people and you're training them for 10 years, you're dealing with adults, there's a lot of life lessons you learn that you can apply to kids too. I tweeted out today, like, this generation, you have to understand it's their generation. It's not ours. Our youth and our teen years are past. So, for example, you know, if they like to listen to a certain artist in music, I better know who that artist is. I better like be able to ask them the question about them. You know, they might not like they might not like Creed. You know, they might not like AC/DC. You know, stuff that we listened to when we played baseball. But just having that like one-on-one, and I mean, I know guys are probably listening like, oh, you're going to listen to their crazy rap music all the time. I mean, not really, but I also want to know what they're listening to. I want to know how it's influencing them. I want to know if it's a positive influence, especially with 2021 players. And I think that's so valuable for what we're doing right now. And when we have our lunch is like, they're not aware of like baseball players. They're not aware of the major league baseball players. Like, they're aware of the stars, but I mean, they're not watching ESPN's top 10 highlights every night like we used to, because that was all you could do. You didn't have a phone to pick up to look at something crazy, right? You got on ESPN and you watched the highlights, and then you watched all of ESPN just to watch those 10 highlights again, and you might have done it again. So there's 3 hours of watching just nonstop sports. So by the end of that, you knew everybody's name. You knew the 7-hole hitter for the Chicago White Sox for whatever reason, right? And you knew his batting stance. You knew what his batting average was for whatever reason because ESPN put it up. And you talk about it the next day at school. That just doesn't happen with this generation. And I talk to our travel guys more than I do our high school guys about this. I coached BC's 15U, BC Athletics' 15U for Brett Carroll. Like, they are so pushed right now to have a Twitter, to have videos out, to get recruited. They're so focused on me, and it's not that they're trying or being selfish and having a me attitude. It's because they've been told that me is more important than anything else. Like, if they want to get to college, if they want to do something in life, they've been told that me is more important. So really, this generation the biggest thing is like, is not being selfish. Like, to love a teammate, to do something for a teammate, to care about someone else besides yourself. And we talk about this on a daily basis. I challenge them daily to get to know a teammate, to text somebody on the team that you've probably never texted, to invite them to play video games at night on Modern Warfare. Like, invite, you know, go play Modern Warfare, but invite somebody that you've not played with, like, from the team. Because again, that's the focus. Like, you get on your social media and you look at these guys and that's what they want. It's me, me, me. So, that's something I think this generation needs. I think they need to watch more baseball, obviously. And that's why we do our baseball lunch. I want them to watch highlights. I want them to watch other players they might not even have a clue about. I want them to know the history of the game. I want them to be have an understanding of, you know, there's other people in life besides yourself. We had this conversation. This is crazy. I'm sitting right where it happened. We've got a really good freshman wide receiver. I won't mention his name. He come in and he's like, I'm the number one receiver in the state. And I had to sit there and look at him. I go, now, buddy, listen, you know, we're in Clinton. He said, yeah. And I said, so Knoxville's got about 165,000 people. I said, Chattanooga's got about 175,000. I said, Nashville's got 620,000. I said, Memphis has got 600,000. I said, so add all those people up, what do you get? He said, that's over a million of people. And I said, yeah, so you're telling me you're the number one guy out of all those guys. And he looked at me and I said, you know what I'm trying to tell you right now? And he said, what do you mean? And I go, you need to humble yourself. Like instead of thinking of yourself as number one, think of yourself as like number 101 and that you got to get to number one. Cause that's my attitude. Like I constantly think that I'm just a dog. Like I'm like, you're just terrible. You got to do something to get yourself better. We had this conversation with our players yesterday. I told them, like, I wake up every day mad. And they're like, what do you mean mad? I'm like, I'm not mad at somebody. I'm not mad at life. I enjoy life. I love it. I said, I wake up mad because I'm not to the point of where I think I should be. And if you can wake up every day with that kind of motivation to do something to get yourself better in life. I said, I get mad when I wake up. I say, you're not a good enough dad yet. You're not a good enough father or a husband yet. You're not a good enough coach yet. You're not a good enough teacher yet. You're not a good enough, you don't talk to God enough. And then you sit there and you look at everything and you're like, I am doing that stuff, but it motivates me to get even more and be better. A big influence on me coaching wise is Tim Corbin. Love the guy. Know his background, know his story. Hopefully I can work a camp with him one day, but I love that guy. I could sit down and listen to him for hours, him and Jack Leggett. I could listen to him for hours because that's their mentality is they wake up every day saying, I am not to the point, like even though they're number one or they've been number one, they don't view themselves as number one. They view themselves as trying to get better. And I think that's what this generation really needs is a big piece of humble pie. And it's not to down them. It's to make them get better and work harder. And they don't get told that enough either. People are scared to tell them that. And I think that's the big thing, Dave. Like when I come back to this 10 years later, it's like everybody's on eggshells about stuff. But I'm like, if you'll create a relationship with your guys and create a relationship with your community and you tell them something that might hurt their feelings, they understand where it's coming from because they understand it's from love. If you don't create that relationship, you don't create the relationship with your community, and you come in here trying to, you know, break kids down and hurt their feelings and try to get them to listen to everything you have to say and do it your way, you're not going to have success, and you're probably going to get ran out anywhere you're at. But you got to create relationships.
Yeah, I would agree. And I mean, I think you're spot on because especially on the humble pie there and the – you know, kids need to understand the concept of service and loving others more than they love themselves. And you talked about social media. And here's what I would challenge coaches. You can't be afraid to hurt somebody's feelings because the sad truth of the matter is there's a real high probability that you're the only person that's going to tell them that.
Exactly.
And if you're in it, I mean, if you're in it for the kid to win, and you've got big picture mentality, you're doing him a disservice by not hurting his feelings, by not telling the truth. Because he's being inundated. He's being inundated by social media and everything he listens to, everything he watches. It's all about me, me, me. And I mean, well, I just talked to my team about that the other day and I told them, listen, I said, guys, this is one of the deepest teams I've had at this school. And you have a chance, you have a real opportunity to be pretty good. But if you don't learn to serve your teammates, you'll never maximize your potential.
100%. It's another big thing that I do too to kind of build that, which I think I got this. I'm almost positive I got this from Coach Snyder, the guy I mentioned earlier, is – you know, we have meetings and stuff. I tend to point out within our group, but you have to be, again, now when I say this, you can't deal with somebody if you don't have this relationship. You can't call out a kid in front of the group, in front of the team, if you don't have this relationship and know how he responds.
Like there's kids that you have to pull aside and call them out. You know what I'm saying? Like you got to pull them aside. Be like, hey man, you know, this is, I don't think that you're doing what you need to be doing correctly. But then there's also kids, like I've got one that, I mean, he's just an absolute dog. And I mean, if I call him out in practice, but it's like he's done on for 2 weeks straight, like doing everything correct because he knows like I'm being viewed right now. Now people are watching me because I've been called out. And the best thing about that is I can tell coaches this because it came from you know, dealing with adults in a gym. Like you call that kid out in front of a group, right? Mm-hmm. You better make sure that you tell them that you love them or you tell them that you think highly of them in front of that group again.
Right.
Because you call him out, right? He does his hard work and he kicks his butt every day. And then you bring that group back in and you don't say something positive about that kid. You're pulling from the drain and you're going up a creek that you don't want to go because you're going to make that kid hate you and resent you every time you bring stuff up and he's going to turn you off.
Right.
Like you got to make sure you tell him you love him. Like I make sure I tell him every day. I love you. I try to give as many, you know, daps or high fives, whatever you want to call it, and bring them in for a hug as possible every single day. And I do that a lot with the kids in the school too, because like you said, on the flip note of that, they've probably never been told the truth sometimes. And we're the only one telling the truth, but there's a lot of kids too, that's never been told, I love you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now you're making, you know, you've got to figure those guys out. And that's what makes coaching fun sometimes, is trying to figure those guys out. But to go off what you were saying, you know, you get on these showcase things and all these showcases are telling them they're so good. Like you're a 70 star ranking, right? Or you've played 12, I know you've coached younger and you've seen this stuff now. You're 12U and you're ranked number 19 in the nation, right? So now you've been told that you're good. You've been told all this, but yet you get to your high school team and you might be the third string shortstop.
Right.
Right. And it's a culture shock.
Yeah.
It's big. I mean, you've got to have those relationships and be able to tell the truth, be able to call kids out, be able to tell them, you know, I love you. You got to be able to have all these relationships. But again, it dives back down is you have to get in there and dive deep. You can't be a coach that shows up, practices, and then leaves, get a text message from three kids, and it might be the most random, stupid text messages you've ever seen. Like, hey, coach, like, what'd you think about me hitting today? And you didn't even see so-and-so hit today, right?
Right.
And you have to respond and say, hey, love to see you hit tomorrow. Make sure you pull me aside so I can see you hit.
Right.
That kid now knows, like, you care. Like, you actually cared. You took the time to text. He knows you're with your family. He knows. You might be the only person he's getting to talk to that night, right? Yeah. And that stuff weighs on my heart a lot. Like when a kid texts me, I have a kid that he's recovering from some intestinal issues. Great kid, hard worker, work ethic, called him every day as much as I could in the hospital. And it's killing him not to be here. And he's trying to get here, come to practice. And I'm having to tell him, no, like, just take it easy. Chill out, dude. You're fine. You're a freshman. You're going to be good. Right. But if I don't have that communication with him, if I don't even respond to him about stuff, if it's a number one thing I hate is when someone like gives you a text message like okay or K. That just tells me, man, you like at the end of a conversation, it's like you don't care.
Right.
Like you can at least say, hey man, appreciate that, or hey man, thank you. Right. I'm a big guy telling people, and I've got our assistant coaches doing it now too. You know, when you see somebody like a teacher in a school or a kid or a parent or something like that, make sure you look at them dead serious, shake their hand, look them straight in the eyes and say, you know what? I appreciate you. I really do. And they might not have done anything, right?
Right.
But they know that you do know who they are and you know that they care and you know that you care. So, but it's such an age. It's social media. It's like, all these kids want to do is get the most views on TikTok. They want to be TikTok famous, right?
Right.
So I had to understand what TikTok is. I mean, I know it's crazy. I'm 33. You're like, why you got TikTok? Well, one thing, my son loves it. He's 4. He watches all these little kid videos and thinks it's hilarious, right? But at the same time, I need to know what my guys are talking about.
Right.
I don't want to be that coach that's like, I don't know, you're playing with that old TikTok thing. I don't even know what that is. Because then they're like, why am I going to listen to you about hitting if you don't know what I like, right? That's what this generation's like.
Right.
10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago when I played or when you played, a coach told you something, it was gold. Right. Like, it didn't matter if he'd won three games or 30 games. He told you, put your hands that way. You're like, you're a genius. It might have been the wrong thing to do. But now they've got 30 different videos. They can go home and disprove everything you said.
Right.
So you better have a relationship and knowing what they like and do and understand what they're doing with their lives. Because that's the only way to create that.
So here's a tough question. But I'm really curious to see what you say. I know that we're quickly approaching a year of dealing with COVID and a situation where we basically, you know, lost an entire season last spring. You're still dealing with, you know, difficulties here and there and navigating and organizing and just due to all the you know, CDC guidelines and whatnot. But through all of that process, what's the one thing you think you've learned?
I mean, everybody said it, so I try not to be like the crowd. That's one thing I do. Like, whatever the trend is, I try to go the opposite. Everything I do. If you know that's my coaching philosophy. Just a little dive in on that. But everybody says it, but it is 100% true. Like, don't take stuff for granted. But the most, you know, everybody says that, so I go against that trend of making that my number one thing that I've learned. The number one thing I've learned is patience.
Oh yeah.
Because I had to really grow in my faith in the Lord even more.
Right.
Through this, because you know I worked for 10 years, knowing every day and I woke up that I was supposed to be a baseball coach. I knew that that's what God's plan was for me. I told everybody when I was like 12, that's what my plan was. Right.
Right.
And here I am running a gym and I'm looking around. It's a great job. People are great. I have no issues. Like, I'm making plenty of money for my family, but I'm not happy. So going 10 years of not being happy can really make you like sometimes being a grouch. Like, I was a grouch sometimes when I was, you know, working for those 10 years because I knew that's not what I wanted to do. So, you know, we move all the way down here, pick up our family, move an hour and a half, 2 hours away to a place that my wife had nobody, didn't know anybody. I didn't know anybody. We get here. Crazy story. I live, I won't mention the names, but we didn't have a house for 3 months. So I lived in basically a room in somebody's house with my family, my little boy, and my wife, that's a little bit bigger than a living room for 3 months. If that tells you how much I wanted this job and how much I knew that I needed to be here, how much my wife believed in me. That's the most important thing on that right there. Right. She could have left me at any time, because we left a beautiful house, and close to grandparents and all that. So, you know, we get here, start having the season, and the COVID shuts it down. And I finally thought I'd figured out our team, especially our seniors. And I was so amped. I mean, that last 3 days I called everybody and their brother. I mean, Casey Taylor, if he's listening to this, can tell you the crazy phone calls we were having at like 12 o'clock at night on a Saturday trying to get a game going for our Sunday because we knew Monday might not be there. So I was out at 6 a.m. that next morning trying to get our field ready. Get it ready, and then by 11 o'clock I'm told that we can't play. So as crazy as that was. So it got to a point where I was really questioning God a lot. And in a spiteful way, in a hateful way. And that lasted for about a month. And then I really had to sit down with my wife one day. I said, this ain't cutting it, man. Like, this ain't who I am. Like, why am I so mad every day? And she goes, sweetie, I don't know. And I had explained to her, like, I think I'm mad because I view this as God is, I get to this point, and God's like, not yet, not yours yet. Like, you can't taste this yet. And, you know, she said, well, go back to what you always thought. Like, what was one thing that you always leaned on? I said, that God challenges me to make me better at something. Like, that's like whenever a problem comes around, like, God is there. He looks at it and says, I'm going to give you the biggest challenge because I know that you can take on the challenge. And I know that when you come out, you'll be even stronger in your faith. And I just sat down and it clicked. I said, you know, I got to get my guys playing in the summer. I got to get them in this league at the Smokies.
I got to call them every day and just make sure they're okay. Because what am I sitting there? I'm being so selfish right now saying, I don't get to have a season. I don't get to have this, but I'm like, you're a coach.
Right.
As long as you're not doing something crazy, getting fired, you're going to have as many seasons as you want. These kids just got their whole entire senior year taken away and they're never getting it back ever. And it really taught me patience and love for my kids, like my seniors, man. I loved them to death. Like, I became so much closer to them. I'd invite them over to my house to either work out or watch videos or play video games. Still talk to them. Still have guys that are alumni that play that come by the field and hit right now during this time. It's just that patience really has really tried me. And when I got to school, I tweeted out. I remember this. I tweeted out because I was really upset one day because everybody's complaining about football season maybe getting canceled. I tweeted out. I said, I don't think anybody's realized, but we still haven't had a season yet, and baseball still is here. And I think it got quite a few likes and retweets, but it was to a point of me just being upset that people didn't understand what was taken from our seniors. But then I realized quickly too, like, go back to what God, go back to the lessons that God's been trying to teach you about challenges, right? Like, you need to go and support the football guys. So I tried to go every night to the sidelines and be there. Cause in my mind, I wanted to look at those guys after the game and make them realize, like, hey, this might be your last game. Cherish this. And I would always talk to those kids in the school, like, go out and play hard tonight and play and give everything you got because it might be the last one, right? And I'd tell our coach, Coach Keith, that I'm like, go out there and play, man, because you don't know. They could shut it down tomorrow. And I talked to our basketball coaches about that a lot. I'm like, they would, especially when winter break was coming up, they're like, man, I don't know if we're going to have a season. I think they're going to shut everything down. I said, guys, you got to be positive. Like, just stay on track. Trust me, just stay on track. Everything's going to be all right. And I think God challenged me to help them, I guess.
That's good.
But, that patience is the biggest lesson that I had to have. And I learned how to golf. So there's the third thing. So so something positive came out of that. I got a golf addiction now.
So you learn how to spend money and get mad.
Exactly. I learned how to go out and spend money, stare at a ball and wonder why I can't hit it like a baseball there. So
two more questions for you. We'll wrap up here. This has been awesome. But, what would you say your ultimate goal as a coach is as you look at your career and, you want to coach as long as possible, but what do you hope to accomplish?
So I've heard all these cool things that certain coaches say, because I've listened to a lot of podcasts like Sheetinger and those guys. And some guys, I think he's either Butch or somebody along those lines said, when I retire or when I pass away, I better have the biggest line in the world for my funeral. That's the kind of impact I want to have on guys. I'm like, what? That's cool, but I can't take that. I can't make that mine. Somebody else said that. That's cool. It's exactly what I think, right? Yep. But, like, my ultimate goal as a coach, because I was talking to our assistants, Jackson and Griffin Tate, and I said, I want to have the largest alumni games of anybody around. Like, from there, we can share the memories of life and baseball success. Like, if we have success, I want to be able to look at, like, 10 years of guys talking to me, because you've went to alumni games or had alumni stuff going before. You might get, like, 8 or 12 guys out, and one of them's from like 1960, and the other one's from like 1999, and they have nothing in common. I want like the actual teams to come back. And that's something you'd mentioned earlier, and I forgot to mention it. You were asking, what's something that I do that's very unique here is I've went back and tried to restore every piece of alumni thing that's ever been here. Right. And that, like, for example, Alvin Taylor, Hall of Famer, used to coach here. I mean, I went on boat rides with him and sat there and talked with him and Gene Owens about stuff and tried to understand what Clinton was about. I've tried to call alumni and have them talk to our guys and tell them what it was like to be a Dragon. Another thing, too, that we've done, I've compiled a list of guys who've either played pro or college, and we're going to put it somewhere on our field, like the all-time list. That was very difficult to come through, but like my goal as a coach, especially here at Clinton, is to create a community that loves to wear orange and black and be a Dragon. And not, and I don't think that they've, I could be wrong because they've had success in sports before. I don't think they've had that in quite a while where guys are just genuinely happy to be a Clinton Dragon and not look at this as a footstep to another job. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Schiedinger said it perfect on a podcast. Be where your feet are at.
Right.
Don't talk about, you know, what you're going to do in 15 or 20 years. Talk about what you're going to do today. Because what you do today is going to help build that 15 to 20 years from now. But if you worry about 15 to 20 years from now, you've lost today. I think that's huge. And as a coach, I want to leave, you know, retire one day and look back and say, man, like, you've got so many guys, like, you've got to get a new cell phone. Like, I'm going to have one cell phone, and, like, the kids call it a burner phone. I'm going to have a burner phone so these kids don't have my number because they're texting me nonstop, say, hey, coach, can you go fish? Hey, coach, can we go hunt? Hey, coach, can we go out on the boat? Hey, coach, can we go do this? Hey, coach, come to my wedding. Hey, coach, when's the alumni game? Like, that's the kind of impact I want to have.
That's awesome.
And that's the kind of the building, the relationships I want to have, because the wins and losses, I mean – comes down to it, you know, you're a high school baseball coach, you're going to lose a lot, you're going to win a lot, and sometimes you might lose more than you win,
right?
But how many, like, if you've got 25 guys, how many of those guys are you winning over for life? Like, that's 25 wins I can get right there. Amen. That's 25 wins that I could get without even stepping on the field and throwing a pitch. And if I can get those 25 wins, I'm going to be a very successful and, in my mind, a Hall of Fame kind of coach, because I'm a Hall of Fame, you know, in their eyes. Right. That's all that matters to me.
Awesome, man. Well, wrapping up here, I just want to give you one more chance. You know, if you got young coaches listening, or even just your peers, you know, what any bits of advice that you'd like to leave on the table?
Man, just to go back to our whole conversation, especially for young coaches, don't come in, because you might consider me a young coach because it's my, you know, basically first, second year head coach, right?
Right.
This comes from just, you know, working that gym for 10 years, coaching in college for a couple, and then coaching, you know, as assistant for a couple years. Like really, really try to get to know not only your players and your parents. Really try to get to know your coaches too. Don't view them as somebody that does a job for you when you're gone. View them as somebody you're trying to grow a job for.
Mm-hmm.
I tell the best piece of advice I've ever given to me is by Rob Taylor and Jordan Compton, my two coaches that I coached under at Pikeville. And they said, you know, we don't hire you to be an assistant coach. We hire you to be a head coach. So, wow. You know, I talk to our guys about that all the time. Like, hey, guys, like, you know, I love it. I'd love it if you'd want to be here 10, 20 years. I'd be even more ecstatic, though, if this was a position for you to get a better job or get a head coaching job one day. And it gives them value to what they're doing for their jobs. It gives them value for what they're doing with the kids. They take it in more pride. They understand it's not just me showing up and hitting a couple ground balls. It's not me watching that extra 30 minutes of practice as Coach Stacy has to go pick up his son, right?
Right.
It's more to that. It gives them more responsibility. That's something I picked up, especially when I was managing people at a gym. When I first started out, I was young, you know, full of vinegar, right? And I mean, I said, I'm going to tell guys what to do, and they're going to listen to me, and they're going to do everything I say. And it took a friend who worked for me one day to literally come up to me and say, hey, man, you know, I didn't really particularly care for you telling me that I didn't do this and this correct in front of everybody. It kind of embarrassed me. This is a huge grown ass dude. Like it blew me away. I was like, why does that bother you? And I went home and thought about it. And I was like, you know what? Like that probably wasn't the way to go about things. I should put more value in you. Make the people or players think you're outstanding. So as a young coach, make sure that you take care of those people. And another thing too, we're talking about, get to know your parents. Coaches talk about this all the time. Like, don't call me about playing time. Don't call me about this. You know, we have rules about that. We have time and place for that. But don't think, like, you have to, like, it changed my mind when I had a four-year-old boy. And I know for you having kids, it probably changed your mind too. Like, you have to view that person's kid as your own too.
Right.
Like if someone has an issue and they might be completely wrong, you have to explain the issue to them in a calm manner and let them get their piece out. Now, right. Whether their piece is correct, whether they know Johnny can play shortstop or second better than, you know, Alex can, that's near here nor there, but hearing their voice or letting them have a voice is very important for you to gain their trust, and especially for their kids to gain their trust too. I did something unique this year. I just said out our parents, I know this is crazy, I've told some coaches this and they're like, I can't believe you did that. I sat them down in a booster club meeting and I just flat out told them what our strategy in playing the game of baseball was and what our team was and how I viewed what our team does well and what our team doesn't do well. And how I view that we were going to win games and how I view that we're, you know, if we don't do this is how we lose games. So, and I told Jackson, our assistant, he was like, this is a kind of a good, crazy idea. Like, where did you come up with this? I was like, I thought about like, what really comes down to it when so-and-so gets upset about whatever happened in the game. He doesn't understand why you bunted when you should have hit and run. He doesn't understand why you hit and run instead of try to hit home runs. He doesn't understand why you threw that pitch instead of this pitch. Well, what if we just told them flat out, this is what we're going to do.
Right.
And then they look at it and they go, you know what? Maybe this guy has a clue because he's doing exactly what he said he's going to do. Right.
Right.
Then, you know, you lose a game and they might be like, well, we lost tonight because we didn't do these three things that they said they needed to do to win. I understand why we lost. And they go home and look at their son and say, you didn't do these three things that helped your team to win tonight. We've talked about this. Your coach told us this, right? So now you're bringing them into you're bringing them in. And I picked that up off of there's a show called, Texas Six is what it's called. It's on CBS. So any coaches that want to watch this, it's great. It's phenomenal. It's about six-man football in the state of Texas. So you've got your six-man football or eight-man football. It's the smallest one. So imagine a high school K through 12, and you've only got like 12 football players, and these guys play six-man football. It's crazy, crazy stuff. Well, what their coach does, he has a film session every Sunday. And because this town is so small, he invites everybody in the town to come watch film with him. So as he's sitting there watching film, he's got all these these old-timers sitting there drinking coffee with a big old chaw in, spitting it all over the floor and everything. Asking him why he did this in the game, and he's explaining it to him why they ran this play or why they had this defense set up and it didn't work. And it really, as the episodes go on, like at the very first, the older guys are very not optimistic about their season. As the episodes progress, you can see that their optimism grows in their team because they see what the coach is trying to implement. They see that he cares, and they see that he is doing exactly what he says he's going to try to do. And they gain respect for the guy. And that's what we've tried to do with our parents is kind of pull back that curtain and say, this is why Johnny does this. Like, this is why Johnny's bunting during the game. Johnny, when he has a practice, I've got it over here on film. Johnny, during practice, doesn't do this very well, but he bunts really well, so he's got in the lineup. And kind of go from there. I mean, that's a little hint of what we do at Clinton that might be really different and might be taboo for other guys, especially. I guarantee it's taboo for older coaches. But again, I'm a guy that likes to go against the trend. If it's trending a certain way, I'm going to go the opposite, because if you're unique in what you do, you're special and you have a chance to be special. So
it's good, man. Well, thanks for coming on. I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your evening there to hop on the show. And that, man, it's quality stuff. And if I can do anything to help you, don't hesitate to ask. And looking forward to spring here, getting the full season in, and best of luck to the Clinton Dragons.
Always, man. Appreciate it. And I have to say it just like all our other coaches do. Go Dragons.
Thanks again for joining us on the show today. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast so we can reach as many coaches as possible with a word of encouragement. Never forget, your job is important. God loves you, and He has a plan for you. Continue to build tomorrow's leaders and stand firm in the faith.